right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
Sean, we've got a guest joining us here shortly in about 10 minutes. We're going to be talking about persuasion as it relates to de-escalating. We got some crazy times we're right now, you know?
Yeah,
A lot of de-escalations needed.
Definitely needed. Like, I was thinking about this, and I was like, you know, ultimately, the reason we study persuasion is to influence behavior. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of a better example than what our guest is going to share. Yep. About influencing behavior. I mean, that's what he does. Like, and he like does this at a very high level, and I won't steal his thunder, but like in some very interesting places.
Oh, yeah.
That he uses this skill set. Yeah. Of de-escalation. So, you know, ultimately, if you don't influence behavior, you're not actually persuading people.
Correct.
So this, I think, will be a fun show to dive into. And I'm looking at his picture. He looks pretty intense himself. So
dude looks like he's got a military background. I mean, I've watched a brief video. So
he looks like a colonel that I wouldn't want to mess with or something, you know, like make sure everything's in order.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got the right look, that square jaw, that look you don't want to cross him, so shouldn't be fun.
Yeah, I feel bad with my round face. All right, so let's talk a little beverages. I've got a beverage today from our sponsor, the Original Craft Beer Club.
Absolutely.
So excited to share that today. This is the last of the August box that I have today. So, want me to go ahead and roll, or do you want to do your little craft beer club spiel?
Pulling it up. So, let's see. Here we go. I should have this thing memorized by now.
Yeah, I'm disappointed.
All right. This week's episode, or our beer tasting segment, is brought to you by our friends over at Craft Beer Club. If it looks like I'm looking over to the left, I just opened up I opened up my Evernote screen with my sponsor read, and it just exploded. All right, so outstanding craft beers from the finest independent microbreweries in the U.S. of A. You know, craft beers have exploded in popularity over the past decade. There are thousands of awesome craft beers being produced by new microbrewers. One of the best ways is to sample these unique beers by letting the Original Craft Beer Club do all the legwork by bringing you some of the best beers in the country. And Sean, you're going to bring a beer, one of your samples, up to what do we got today?
Today we have an ale. So this is Cave Ale from Potosi Brewing Company. So this is the same Potosi brewing company that we had a few other times. I guess I'm saying that right. It's up in Wisconsin. So Potosi.
It's
a little Potosi. Don't you know? Some good beer, don't you know? That's a little too much accent there. But anyway, so I've got a Cave Ale.
Ah.
I have no idea what a Cave Ale is, but let's find out. So, check this out too. I told you about these, but if you're watching on video and you're old, like Jonathan and I, like I found these reading glasses that I now need, but check this out. Like my reading glasses are on my phone case.
Wow.
Right. So like they're right here.
No, that's super slim. Like, you kidding me?
So they come out, they pop out.
Oh my goodness.
And they have no handles on them. So you just like, they're spring loaded like Morpheus, you know, so it makes you feel really cool.
So it doesn't matter what size schnauzer you've got, you're okay.
And they stay on pretty good. This is a Cave Ale. It's an English style amber ale, 5.5% ABV, 15 IBUs. Caves carved in the hills of Potosi were once used to age and store beer. Named in that tradition, Potosi's English-style amber ale boasts subtle caramel and earthy aromas with complex flavors of roasted caramel, malts perfectly balanced with golden hops, and old-school amber in the best way. This beer is extremely drinkable and refreshing.
I should hope it's drinkable.
Yeah, right? 89 points silver medal at the Tastinga tastingo.com or tastingo.com. We'll have to check that out. Tastingo.com.
Hold that up one more time. Ah, very nice. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
So what was it? You said when you said 15 IBUs, I thought you said I first thought you said 15 ABV.
Yeah, it was 5.5.
Okay.
On the ABV. Right. So
very good.
So yeah, so just a good old amber ale, it sounds like.
All right.
Gotta work around the mic stand here and for a good pour.
Okay, so for mine, while you're pouring, I've got a Shipyard Pumpkinhead for continuing on with the Oktoberfest.
You are all in the Oktoberfest.
Well, you see them everywhere now, so why not, yeah. Right? This is from Maine. These guys are from, it's Total Beverage Solution, Maine, USA. This is a wheat ale spiced wheat ale. A pumpkin wheat ale. So I guess
pumpkin
that's
pretty cool. Wheat ale.
Yeah.
Cool.
Seasonal favorite is crisp and refreshing wheat ale with a delightful aromatic and subtle spiced flavor. So this is seasonal. It'll last until October and then you'll never find it. So.
Or today it'll last for about 45 minutes.
Right. So. Yeah. It won't last long. And my mistake, it's Shipyard Brewing, not Total, whatever I said earlier. Shipyard Brewing Company. So they're up in Maine, I believe.
All right. Well, let's check them out. Let's have our I don't know what you want to call it. I don't want to steal Scott Adams stuff. So, so cheers.
Cheers. Oh, wow. A lot of pumpkin going on there.
Mine's actually really good. It's exactly what I would expect from like an amber ale.
Yeah.
So, it's really good. A little bit like, not quite as dark as the Newcastle, but kind of in that world, in that wheelhouse.
Yeah.
You know, good. Yeah, this is a very, it's funny, like some of their other ones that rated higher, I like this one better, so.
Okay, so your rating?
So I would give this for the style of beer it is, out of 5 pints, I'm gonna give it a 3.9.
3.9.
Just an easy drinking, good old cave ale, amber ale.
Amber ale.
So you got a lot of pumpkin going on, so let's see how that affects the ale score.
So first sip is like a pumpkin pie is all I can describe. So it's not really what I want. I love pumpkin pie, you know, during Thanksgiving, but it's not really something I like for a beer. It's not quite what I expected for a pumpkin ale.
So it's more like a pumpkin pie smoothie at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little heavy on the pumpkin.
Well, it'll be nice to see if it mellows out. Yeah. As it
possibly
airs out.
As it stands now, probably give this a 2.23 or something like that.
Ooh, yeah, wow.
Not great.
Yeah, hit you pretty hard. Yep. Man. All right.
All right. So we're ready. We've got our guest in the green room.
All right.
He is ready to go.
Of course, he's former military. Of course, he's going to be early, right? He'll be on
prior to 4:30. So let's bring up. Let me pull up my notes here. We're going to bring Doug up into our green room. Doug, how are you?
Hey guys, it looks like you're having fun with that beer.
We do.
Yeah.
Drinking time where you are. It's still middle of the day here in California.
Yeah, that's what I told Sean. I said, you know, I don't think Doug's going to be joining us on the beverage because it's still 1:30. And then you said you've got a Zoom call after. So I'm assuming that's business related. So that's probably.
I'm a part of a small startup. And so it's our weekly business meeting. So it's all good. 3:00. Yep. Yeah, no, we're here. I'm here. I live just south of Yosemite National Park. We're right on the edge of the Creek Fire. We just had power restored yesterday.
Wow.
We were living off a generator for the week. And we were under evac orders, but it looks like the fire is not coming down here. So we're lucky. But boy, I'll tell you, 180,000 acres in the central Sierra Nevada. Wow. Been awful.
It's all up and down the West Coast right now.
It is. I mean, Oregon's getting hammered.
Yeah.
So
I saw some of the pictures from the up in Northern California, where up in San Francisco, where just the skies are orange. I mean, it's like 12 noon and you can't see anything but orange skies.
It's been nothing but smoke for 2 weeks. I mean, this fire just broke out a week ago today. It burned 180,000 acres in less than 5 days.
Wow.
Man. And this is in the top 20 largest fires in California, but it's not the biggest. The biggest ones are way north, of course. So,
yeah.
Wow.
Oh, well, no such thing as global warming, right?
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you won in LA this week. So it's pretty warm.
California, this has become so regular for California. It's own season, you know, smoky.
Well, it is. You know, we're finally recognizing that from now, from end of August until the first rains come in, probably December, is wildfire season. And what's going to happen is, you know, we had a long drought. It killed off all the trees between 3,000 and 7,000 feet. You know, we have over 100 million trees are dead. There's just dynamite up there. And there's going to be this burn off over the next 10 years. It's just until all the forests are burned down, they can start over again.
Yep.
So,
wow.
It's a mess.
Crazy. Well, we're excited to have you on, Doug.
Thanks.
Jonathan told me about you and I looked you up and very, very interesting. So we did a little bit of a tease and I was telling the people listening, I was like, hey, persuasion is ultimately about changing behavior, right? So we talk about persuasion, and if you're not changing behavior, you're not actually persuading. So when Jonathan sent me your stuff and told me what you do, I was like, that's a pretty good example of like immediately changing behavior.
Right.
So why don't you, Jonathan, do you want to read a little bio first?
Yeah.
Or we'll jump in.
So Doug, do you go by Douglas or Doug?
I go by Doug.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Cause your bio shows Douglas, but, we want to talk about, Doug, you've got a book out called Deescalate. I've had some time to actually go through that today. Really interesting. There's some parts in that definitely want to get into on some getting into some steps for de-escalating those situations where you're confronted. We kind of emailed back and forth yesterday, and I think I mentioned, you know, this is kind of good timing because there's a lot of you know, it's political season, so you know, here there's a lot of, you know, intense debates going on online and in person. And I mean, people's anger seems to be at an all-time pitch. So I think this is appropriate, and this is good timing for something like this when you're confronting somebody that's a little angry towards your opinion, or maybe just hostile in general, for whatever reason. So I definitely want to get into that. I do want to cover your bio though, just for our listeners who are not familiar. Douglas Knoll, or Doug, is a author, mediator, peacemaker. You're an attorney, a lawyer turned peacemaker, specializing in difficult, complex, and intractable conflicts. You graduated from Dartmouth College, earned a degree at the University of Pacific McGeorge School of Law, and you're a member of the Law Review. You've also earned your MA in Peacemaking and Conflict Studies from Fresno Pacific University. So I'm glad to have you join us today.
Thanks.
I'll give you a little applause there. That's one of our de-escalation techniques.
I love that. I love this setup, by the way. I've never seen this platform before. I got to compliment you guys. This is a very cool platform.
Oh, yeah. So
StreamYard.com. Very cool.
Yeah, we love StreamYard. We've been using this for probably the last 3 months or so. Used to use Zoom, but you know, Zoom has got some problems there. We love to be able to kind of stream on different locations, but I got it. Before we get into the topic, I want to ask you, so I know you're not having a beverage with us. If you were having a beverage, is there wine, beer, or do you kind of, are you non-alcoholic? Do you kind of stay away?
Oh, no. I'm a whiskey drinker these days. Oh,
awesome. Okay.
All right.
And I am a total whiskey whore. I'll drink anything. Almost. Irish. I really like Irish, good Irish whiskey, which we'll bring over. We'll import it in from Ireland.
Sure.
All different kinds of scotch, American bourbons, Canadian whiskey. My kind of whiskey of choice is one that's favored by my cowboy friends called Pendleton. It's a Canadian whiskey that's bottled up in Pendleton, Oregon. Okay. And it's got a very smooth, kind of brown sugary flavor to it. It's really, really nice sipping whiskey for everyday whiskey. So, but I love beer, and I drink beer during ski season.
Okay.
And I've been a wine crazy guy for over 40 years, but the problem is, as I'm getting older, I can't handle the sugar. I get too fat. Yeah. Same thing with the beer.
Yeah.
I figured out the whiskey doesn't make me fat. I can actually lose weight and drink whiskey. So
there you go.
Or so you can do like I did. I just ran 5 miles before the show.
Well, that too. That's kind of mandatory. I don't ride. I hop on my stationary bike and ride for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So every day. So you got to do that.
Yeah.
But that's a given.
Yep. Absolutely.
So. Yeah. Well, yeah, cool. We love our whiskey here too. I think one of my favorite is Suntory's Japanese whiskeys.
Oh, sure. Now I haven't had a lot of Japanese whiskey. I'm familiar with it, but
yeah.
I think I only had it once or twice.
Yeah, there's Suntory has two that are pretty popular.
Mm-hmm.
That are really one of them. Actually, the less expensive one's super smooth. I can't remember the name right now, but just really good sipping whiskey.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. So cool. We've got lots in common there.
Absolutely.
Well, gentlemen, let's dive in. Let's talk about de-escalating, because the line that got me, just for our listeners to kind of dive into this, is that, Doug, you turn murderers into peacemakers.
Yep.
And that was the best line of copy on the whole.
It is.
Whole
page.
Well, Sean, good.
Sean caught that in a heartbeat. He's the copywriter.
I want to know about that. What's going on? So a colleague of mine, Laurel Coffer, and I started the Prison of Peace Project back in 2009 at the invitation of a woman who was serving a life sentence without possibility of parole in what was then the largest, most violent women's prison in the world here in California. At that time, it was the Valley State Prison for Women. And we checked it out and decided that this is something we should try because we're both professional mediators and law professors and teachers. And we thought, well, what the heck? Mm-hmm. And I, at the time, had been working on these de-escalation skills and getting a lot of pushback from people because they just couldn't believe that something, even based on neuroscience, which is what these skills are based on, actually worked. And I said, well, all right, let's go in and really acid test this. So we started our training in 2010 and had no idea that it would be what it is today. Today, we're in 13 California prisons, a prison in Connecticut, 14 prisons in Greece, and we've got colleagues starting the project in Nairobi and also in Italy.
Wow. That's a lot in 10 years.
It's a lot in 10 years. Yeah. And of course, COVID has shut everything down for the time being. But it's just amazing what this project has done. All of the inmates, both men and women, that have gone through our program and have been released are leading exemplary lives. We have about 1,000 inmates who have been released after graduating from our program with zero reports of recidivism. I mean, no reoffending. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely unbelievable. And their lives are changed forever as of course our lives have been changed too. So that's what the Prison of Peace Project is. It's basically a very rigorous 3-year program to train lifers and long-termers how to become mediators and peacemakers in their prison communities to stop the violence. And they've been extremely effective at that. We've gone into some pretty nasty places and usually within a year, we're seeing significant behavioral changes within the prison communities. And we've got all kinds of letters from wardens and yard captains, all kinds of people writing to us and saying, we don't know what you did, but it works. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
so that's the Prison Project. And so that's exactly what we do. We train murderers how to be peacemakers. And the core skill that we teach beginning on the very first day is how to listen, to listen to emotions, not words. Ignore the words. They're not important. And it's totally counterintuitive to everything we think we know about calming people down. Mm-hmm. And it's based on brain science. It's based on, the fundamental study was done in 2007 by a guy named Matthew Lieberman out of UCLA. And he basically showed that when you label emotions, it's called affect labeling, as opposed to saying anything else, it has this magical effect in the brain of inhibiting the emotional centers of the brain and reactivating the prefrontal cortex. And it happens within 30 seconds.
So when you say label emotions, what do you mean by that?
So I would say, Sean, you're really frustrated. You are really pissed off. You're angry. You don't feel like you're being listened to. You feel completely unsupported. And you're really sad because nobody around here is doing what you need them to do. And you're a little anxious about it because your $50 million quarterly bonus is dependent upon people doing what they say they're going to do. And you're a little pissed off that because of what's going on around here, you may not get that bonus.
Yeah. Cool. So, yeah,
that's
to me, that's
affect labeling.
So yeah, I mean, even though that wasn't like a real situation, like I could feel
that's right.
Like something going on where it's like,
that's right. And we're hardwired for this and nothing else will work. I mean, I've taught this all over the world and people challenge me on this because there's all kinds of other listening things out there. And I said, where's your science? Show me your science and I'll read it. Sure. I've got science behind what I'm teaching and it works. And if I can teach murderers to be peacemakers, I can teach anybody to do this work. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a pretty strong, proof there when you get that. It's funny you mentioned this. I was doing a training for some copywriters and, one of the books that I use a lot is this Words That Change Mind by Charvet. It's like an old NLP-ish type book. Well, one phrase in there that she talks about is don't listen to what people say, listen to how they say it, which is similar to kind of what you're saying.
That's right.
It's not what's being said. It's how they're saying it, the emotion behind it.
Right. It's not the words that are important. It's the emotions. And what we know from the science is that when we can reflect back the emotions, even if we're wrong, just by reflecting back the emotions, we change what's going on in the brain physiology.
So what's actually happening?
Well, what's happening is, all right, let me see if I can give a short non-neuroscience explanation. So let's start off with some basic propositions. Proposition number one is we're 98% emotional and only 2% rational. Okay. Human beings are not rational beings. Never have been, never will be. And all that philosophy and theology and everything for 4,000 years that have taught us to the contrary is just plain wrong. So that's the first thing. We got to make the shift and realize we're emotional beings, not rational beings. Second, we are not born with emotion. We are born with what's known as affect. And we actually construct emotions right around the time we become verbal as toddlers, 18 months, somewhere right in there. We are born with I use Sylvan Tompkins' 9 affect model, but we are born with these things called affect. And these are physiological states. We have 2 positive affect, 1 negative, and 6 negative affect. And it's the combination of these different affect that we learn how to construct emotions, which are simply symbolic representations of the affective experience we're having in the moment. So anger is an affect, but it's also an emotion. But we can have all kinds of words around anger, from describing describing very mild annoyance to just incredible rage.
Yeah.
And so, well, here's the problem. What's supposed to happen in with us as we're growing up is we're supposed to be from about 0 to 5 years old. We are supposed to build a database of emotions where we have vocabulary that associates with these various affective states. And that's called emotional categorization. The problem is that we live in a society that really avoids emotions, and we're told that emotions are problematic. And so we never are taught emotional competency. In fact, we are emotionally invalidated all the time. I mean, remember, you guys have this experience too. Every man I've ever talked to has had this experience. You're 2 years old, you're outside running around, you fall down, you scrape your knee, and you start to cry. What are you told?
Either shake it off, don't cry.
Shake it off, don't cry, don't be a crybaby, don't be a sissy, be a man. Yeah. And what is that message telling you about your emotional state? It's telling you you can't experience emotion. Emotions are bad.
Yeah.
Well, what's really going on with, and it happens everywhere, it's insidious. What's really going on with emotional invalidation is the person who is invalidating you, let's say a parent, is actually feeling anxiety around your upset. And the only way they know how to soothe their anxiety is to invalidate your emotion. Because if your emotion is no longer important to them, their anxiety goes away. Of course, what they're doing is deeply abusing you as a child. And this is why there are so many problems in our society. And there are all kinds of studies, basically the ACEs study, probably the most important one, that shows that emotional abuse, pervasive and insidious emotional abuse, is the leading cause of alcoholism, drug addiction, crime, cancer, diabetes, chronic pulmonary, CPD, you know, I mean, and it's a Kaiser study. And of course, Kaiser was interested in saying what causes people to die. Mm-hmm. And they found out it's emotional abuse in childhood. And emotional abuse is caused by this invalidation process. So we don't learn how to categorize. That turns us, that means that when we move into adulthood, we carry with us our emotional development up and up to the point where we got stuck somewhere. It could be at 6 years old. It could be at 8 years old. Somewhere in there, all of us got stuck because we were not able to progress emotionally beyond that point. And so when we get into stressful situations, we revert back to where we got stuck. Now, what affect labeling does is helps us get unstuck, because when we become angry, let's say, our prefrontal cortex shuts down, our limbic system, the center part of the brain, the emotional center of the brain, gets activated and basically takes over, and it dominates our physiology through the polyvagal system. And that's why when people get angry, they lose control. They can no longer think. And we've all had this experience. When we affect label something, we reflect back their emotions. We are literally lending our prefrontal cortex to that angry person for about 30 seconds. And that's all it takes for them to get back in control. And sure. Once they do that, everything quiets down immediately. It's phenomenal to watch and to do. And it's the only thing I've ever learned or I've ever discovered that really works. Everything else out there, like I'm writing a blog article right now for my website on what to do when somebody is screaming at you. And I go out and look at all the blogs and see what people are writing. It's all garbage. They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And there's no science. And this stuff has got science behind it, and it really works. And it's just amazing how powerful it is. So that's in a nutshell kind of what this is all about.
I know in your book you talk about there's three essential steps to affect the labeling. Epically, so we talked about the one, yeah, to
ignore the words.
Ignore the words. Here's one that's interesting. And when I first read this, it guess at the emotions. Can you kind of talk a little bit about that? Because that's kind of intriguing. That caught my eye.
So the second step is we've got to acknowledge and recognize the emotions of this angry person in front of us. So depending upon the audience, I'm either going to say, all you have to do is guess at the emotions, because it doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong.
Yeah.
Or if I'm talking to engineers and scientists, I'll say, read the emotional data fields, because they get that, right?
Yeah.
Because we do have emotional data fields. So for most people who are insecure about reading emotions, they go, I don't know how to do that. I said, well, fine, just guess at it. Here's the thing. We are, as human beings, we are hardwired to read the emotions of other human beings. And this goes back for millions of years. I mean, think about it. We've only been verbal. There's only been language for 230,000 years. And yet hominids have been on the planet for what, 4 or 5 million years? They communicated through emotions long before we mastered fire, which then allowed us to change diets, which allowed a very rapid expansion of our brain and pharyngeal nerves and muscles, which allowed us to create sounds that could ultimately became language. So we are hardwired for this. And there are huge centers in our brain that can do facial recognition, for example, and emotional recognition. All we have to do is let that part of our brain that knows what to do, do it. And so the secret to guessing at the emotions is you're screaming at me, Jonathan, and I just sit there kind of passive, but I'm ignoring your words. All I hear is the noise, not the words.
Sure.
And I'm just sitting in silence. I'm not trying to do anything. And in a moment, literally a moment, your emotions will start to flow into my mind. What you're feeling, what you're experiencing will come to me. And all I have to do is repeat whatever comes into my head, because it's going to be accurate. I can rely on it to be almost 100% accurate.
And that's because, if my understanding is correct, that's because we've all kind of been programmed what these different labels are throughout life. I mean, I would think it's pretty common across any given culture.
Yes. That's right, Sean. Here's the other reason why this is really pretty easy to do is we human beings have a very limited repertoire of emotions. I mean, really limited. People who are not trained in this look at anger or fighting or arguments, and it's all chaos. It's just a big mess. Mm-hmm. But once you start becoming trained in this and you start mastering these skills, you realize there's no mess here at all. It's very predictable and it's very easy to analyze what's going on, and you get better and better at it as you practice it. So you don't need, you only need a vocabulary of 10 words in order to de-escalate anybody anytime. 10 words, that's all you need. And you're gonna get 98% of it,
sure,
which is all you really need. Now it is cultural. So, you know, I'm writing from the perspective of Western culture. If you go to India, for example, these skills will still work, but you have to make them culturally appropriate. Same thing in Asia, same thing in South America, in Latinx countries. You've got to make it culturally appropriate because emotions are culture. Mm-hmm. But the brain is the brain. A human brain here in the United States is pretty much the same as a human brain in Japan. And they're hardwired pretty much the same way. Yeah, of course, there are many differences, but the hardwiring is pretty much the same. And so human beings will respond in different ways. And I've had students from around the world report how effective this has been in non-English speaking cultures that are quite different than where we live. Yeah. And it works. It works.
So I'm going to ask this question for Jonathan. So does this work on teenage boys whose prefrontal cortex is not developed?
Yes. So supposing you got, let's talk about your classic 14-year-old boy.
Yeah. Perfect. I skip straight to that part in the book.
Head down. The most you can get out of him is a grunt, maybe, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
All right. What's going on with that kid? First of all, he feels emotionally very unsafe. He's probably felt emotionally unsafe for a long time. Mm-hmm. And now he's in that weird stage, 14 years old, where he's not a boy, he's not a man, fish nor fowl. We all remember how fun that was. And he is completely and totally confused and afraid. And he's afraid of himself and he's afraid of everybody else. So the first thing you have to do is create emotional safety. And what you do is you, even though he's not giving you any response, we've all been there. We know what he's feeling. Oh man, you're really angry. You're really pissed off. You don't feel listened to. You don't feel respected. Nobody's supporting you. Nobody's listening to you. And you feel really sad and you feel completely abandoned, unloved, and you don't think you're worthy of anybody's respect because nobody respects you. And that kind of pisses you off. And that's all you have to say. Now here, and I've teached this to middle school teachers, right? And yeah, high school teachers who are dealing with, and they say, well, he's not responding. I said, if he doesn't walk away, he's sucking this up by the gallon. Don't stop.
Yeah.
Keep going. Don't give up on him. You're not going to get a response from him because he doesn't feel safe. Eventually, and by eventually, I mean within 2 or 3 or 4 weeks of doing this, he will feel safe and he will start talking to you, and you'll have the amazing experience of him putting down his phone or his game console and coming to you and having a real conversation with you.
Sure.
Because he feels safe.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had thousands of parents report to me that this happens over and over and over again. I just smile and say, yep, that's how our brains are hardwired. All we have to do is create that emotional safety to open him up.
So next question for me is, does this work on in like text and over Slack and some of the tools that we use so much in our lives today?
Yeah. I always crack up. I've got a couple of YouTube channels and every now and then I get a snarky comment, right? You guys know it. Online publicly, you're going to get snarky comments. All I do is affect label them. Oh, you're really frustrated. You're really angry. You feel disrespected. You feel like I'm not listening to you. Goes away. Same thing with text. I'm not big on text because I prefer email to communicate with people, but a lot of people like text. And I say, mm-hmm. Yeah, this absolutely works with texting. You can text the emotions, affect label somebody who's mad or upset, affect label them, and it works perfectly. It's not as good as talking to them,
right?
Of course, but it works. It still works. They can read it. They react to calm down. And there you are. We can't help ourselves. Our brains are hardwired for this.
Because that's the reading. They're going to process the words and the all that stuff.
Okay. That's right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So you talk, one thing you mentioned, and I'll make this point because this is interesting, the importance of taking the ego out of this when you make statements like this, because let's rephrase that, one of those statements that you said, instead of saying you're feeling, if I were to say my, what I think you're feeling is, so what I'm doing is I'm inserting my own thoughts into that. And that kind of, it's almost counterproductive to do that.
It doesn't work. I mean, you guys know this. How many times has somebody tried to use this quote, active listening on you? Mm-hmm. Where they, what I think you're feeling is anger.
Yeah.
And what do you feel when, that people do that? You're pissed off, you're patronized, you're feeling disrespected. It does not work. And yet just today and yesterday, out reading 100 blogs on how to calm people down, everybody's saying, oh, you use an I statement.
Yeah.
Sorry, they don't know what they're talking about. And when I teach workshops, I'll get pushback. And people, oh, I have to use an I statement. I said, really? The reason people use I statements is because they're soothing their own anxiety around the emotions of the person they're talking to. The science shows that the only thing that works is a you statement. Yeah. And I have yet to have anybody confront me with a research study, a brain scanning study that shows that I statements are effective when you're trying to calm another person down. There is a time when I statements are important, and that's when you're asserting your own emotions. Right. I really, when you come in the house with mud on your feet, I really get angry because I work so hard to keep the house clean. That's an appropriate use of an I statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Objective statement, when you come in the house with mud on your feet. Subjective statement, my emotional experience. And the reason that I'm angry is because I work so hard to keep the house clean. Right. That's when it's appropriate to use an I statement. So use I statements to assert your own emotions. Use statements to reflect the emotions of other people.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, yeah. I don't know why people don't teach this. They teach it all opposite, and it doesn't work.
Yeah. And I mean, that lines up with, you know, old school copy techniques and everything. That's talking directly to the reader. Yeah. Or you're telling a story in the first person, your own story. So, I mean, that makes sense to my brain as a copywriter. It certainly makes sense.
Well, I'm a copywriter too. And I mean, in fact, I've really been studying copywriting in the last 2 years. And I just realized, this is just affect labeling.
Yeah.
Same application. You know, I just got to, you know, twist it a little bit to make it work for selling or doing whatever I'm doing. I'm writing a sales page or whatever. Emails, for example, same thing. Writing emails. Email copy is nothing more than affect labeling.
Well, yeah, and labeling is, it's used in negotiation all the time, you know.
Sure. So, yeah, and you guys are all about persuasion and negotiation. The most important thing you can do is validate the existence of another person that you're trying to persuade or negotiate with. Yeah. And validation is the one thing that people don't get in their lives. Like I talked, because of emotional invalidation. When you can start validating people, they feel so relieved that they've finally been listened to at a deeper level. They'll do anything for you. Mm-hmm. And this is why, I mean, this is how I got into this, is as a mediator, of course. I'm dealing with these really intense, crazy conflicts where people would rather shoot each other than sit down at the table and talk, right? I mean, and I've seen it. So how I had to struggle to figure out how to, and the I statements and NVC and all that crap, it's all bullshit. None of it works. And I get a lot of pushback on that, but I'm sorry. I spent thousands of dollars and many, 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 many hours in workshops seeing if people could really teach stuff, and they couldn't. Right. And that's how I developed this, because out of necessity, really, as a mediator. Mm-hmm. But when you get people calmed down this way, they're grateful. And all of a sudden, now you can do some pretty serious problem solving or negotiating, or you can persuade people to your righteousness. I mean, all you have to do is look at, I don't want to get too political here, but I want to talk about political polarization too, because that's an off spin of this. It's important for people to know. Mm-hmm. But why is it that people like Donald Trump are so effective, even though he knows nothing about any of this stuff? Why does he have such a large group of supporters that seem to be unwavering in their support? It's because he's instinctively, intuitively tapping into their emotional experience, their anger, mm-hmm. their frustration, the fact that they feel like they're being left behind by modernity, mm-hmm. and their inability to, you know, for whatever reason, to deal with the complexity of modern life. And so he offers them solace, mm-hmm. and they'll follow him anywhere. Right. And like he's absolutely right. He could shoot somebody with a gun on Fifth Avenue in New York City. And
that's right.
Wouldn't bother him at all. I wouldn't bother anybody at all.
Yeah.
Because he's tapped into an emotional resonance with them that's made him extremely persuasive.
Yeah, I think he speaks. I would take that a step further, and I would say I think he says things for people that they are not willing to say
that's
themselves.
Right. That's right. That's exactly right. And so that is, he's validating what they're thinking by saying that's extremely persuasive.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's why he's been effective at what he does in terms of keeping his base. Now, of course, that doesn't resonate with a lot of people, the majority, but it doesn't matter. He got elected on a minority and he may do it again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we, as people who are interested in persuasion, we want to look at that and say, what's going on here? Why is this guy so effective?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Yeah. It's fascinating stuff for sure.
It is. That goes back to my statement. We're 98% emotional and 2% rational. So if we can work with people's emotionality, then we can get a lot done, either for good or for ill. And it's just making that mind shift that Plato was wrong, Aristotle was wrong, Descartes was wrong, you know, the Bishop of Hippo Augustine, who created the theology for the Catholic Church, he was wrong. These guys were all wrong in their assessments about human nature.
Sure.
And it's not that they were wrong because they were stupid. It's just wrong because only in the last 20 years, with the advent of some new technology, we've been really able to study how the human brain actually operates and what's really going on inside the black box.
Yeah.
And it's those findings that are completely upending. In my profession, in the law, for example, neuroscience is seriously challenging some fundamental assumptions of human nature upon which the law is based. Mm-hmm. The law is based on the idea that we are rational creatures. You know, neuroscientists say, no way.
Yeah.
The whole idea of crime, a concept known as mens rea, the intent to have a crime. Neuroscientists are saying there's no such thing as free will.
Yeah.
We've already made the decision something like a second before we're consciously aware that we've made the decision.
Yeah.
If that's true, if all our decisions are being made unconsciously and only after a bunch of processing to become aware of it, what does that do to free will?
Yeah.
And that also has huge implications in theology and in moral philosophy and law, political science. I mean, it cuts across the board that what we're learning now is that the way we thought the world was, not so. Mm-hmm. And so, we have to shift our reality as a result of that.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
Yeah. So there's a common saying in, you know, sales, marketing, persuasion, copyright, and all those categories that you sell on emotion and then you justify with logic.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So that still holds true.
Absolutely.
It's just the emotion is what it is.
Never try to sell on rationality.
Yeah. Yeah.
But try to sell on the, you know, I mean, you're copyrighted. Yeah. What are the pain points?
Yeah.
Pound those pain points. Agitate, poke the bear.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep saying to myself, poke this bear. What are they feeling right now? Agitate.
So I'm wondering, like, it almost sounds to me like you could lean even more on emotion than what most people do.
Yes.
I think a lot of people have a tendency, again, I think it's part of ego and like your own anxiety of poking the bear.
Right.
That you shift to logic probably earlier than you need to. Like that's really right. Good copywriters will stick in that emotion a lot that's longer right. than the average copywriter will.
That's right. We're so excited about our own product. Like I've been doing online marketing for a number of years now, marketing my own courses and doing some affiliate marketing. And we're so enamored of our own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We want to just talk about our stuff because we're ego me oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of discipline to recognize the reader, the person landing on this page could care less about what I think.
Right.
And what they want is a solution to their pain. And what they will do is they will buy if you can demonstrate to them that you know their pain better than they do.
Mm-hmm.
If you understand their problem better than they do, you will build immediate trust, persuasion. Mm-hmm. You build immediate trust and they're more likely than not to follow your recommendation when you get down to the end and talk about the solution. And even when you're talking about the solution, you're talking about all the pain and how the pain will go away. You're not talking ever about how wonderful you are.
Right. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Let's talk about core messaging. I'm curious in chapter 5, the art of core messaging. Can you give us a summary?
Yeah. Let me back up a little bit and say there's this thing called active listening, which is worthless to me, but there is a thing called reflective listening, which is quite a bit different because in reflective listening, you are using you statements, but using them in different ways. So there are four levels, let's call them reflective listening. The first is mirroring, where you repeat back word for word what the other person said. Now we all know that mirroring will never work to calm somebody down. It, all it does is piss people off. But there is a time when mirroring is really important. So I'm a pilot. I'm an instrument rated pilot. So before I take off on an instrument flight plan, I have got to get a clearance from air traffic control, and I have to mirror back that clearance, the instructions they give me, word for word, 100% accurate. Because at 8,000 feet and 200 miles an hour, crushed aluminum is really a bad thing. So mirroring, when you're dealing with procedures or processes or recipes or lists or anything like that, very effective. Otherwise, not effective. Second level is paraphrasing. This is what most people learn in active listening using an I statement. In paraphrasing, we use a you statement, but basically what you're doing is restating what somebody said, their words, and you're just putting it into your own words. Very effective, can be used. It's not great at de-escalation, but it is great to get clarification. Third level, core messaging. How many times have you been in a conversation with somebody and they're just going all over the place? They're like a rabbit running around, have no direction, and you just sit there, oh my God, what time is it? How long am I going to be here? So that's when you're going to be doing core messaging. And core messaging, you begin to ignore the words. And what you're trying to do is focus on their meaning. What are they really trying to say? What's the real meaning behind what they're trying to communicate? And a core message is going to be a reflection, but it's going to be very, very short. It's going to be a very short summary of the meaning that they're trying to convey, that you are getting from listening to all of this. And so you sit in silence, and like affect labeling, core messaging, you sit in silence and just wait, and the meaning will come to you. And then you just reflect. So what you're saying is, da, 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 17, 18, 20 words, no more. And they'll say, yeah. End of conversation. So whenever you've got somebody who's just going all over the place and they're going around the bush, but for some reason they can't get into the bush, core message them, and that'll silence them, because they got the itch scratch. That's what they're trying to do.
Sure.
And then we get to the fourth level, which is the deepest level, and that's affect labeling or reflecting emotions. And there we flip everything. We no longer pay attention to the words. We ignore the words. We guess at the emotions, and then we reflect back those emotions with a simple you statement. So you can see how in these four levels, how everything reverses. In mirroring, you're totally focused on the words and, you know, making sure they're exactly correct. Right. And then in affect labeling, at the other end of the spectrum, you're completely ignoring the words and paying attention only to the feelings and emotions and reflecting those back. So that's how it all works.
Hmm. And do you do this in one conversation or?
You could use all, that's a great point, because when we're teaching this, and when we're teaching our inmates how to teach this, the biggest challenge is keeping each skill separate as a teaching process. So example, if I'm teaching core messaging, I don't want to core message an affect label, but that's your natural thing. You're going to paraphrase core message and affect label all at the same time. Mm-hmm. But when you're teaching, you've got to break it down.
Right.
And so that actually becomes quite difficult, because when you've mastered these levels of reflective listening, you use it all. And now as a teacher, you have to kind of break your habit that you've worked so hard to master so that you can teach your students, here's what the different levels of reflective listening look like, isolated to this one thing. And so, yes, that's a long answer. The short answer is you use them all.
Sure.
I'll paraphrase core message, affect label, you know, whatever is called for in the moment. The other thing that's really cool is you can use this not only for conflict and arguments, but you can use it for positive emotions too. The most powerful thing you can do for a child, especially a young child, 3, 4, 5, 6, even 2-year-olds, is affect label their happiness. Oh, you're really happy today. Oh, you're really excited. You know, whatever they're experiencing, label their emotions, because every time you label that child's emotions, you're helping them build that emotional database I was talking about. Mm. And the more you label them, the more their behaviors will change towards maturity. And by the time they become young adults, they will be emotionally competent human beings if they're given this stuff. Hmm. So it's the opposite of emotional invalidation. Validate their emotions. Don't invalidate them.
Right.
Oh, you fell and skinned your knee. That hurts. You're scared. You have a lot of anxiety. You don't know what's going to happen next. And it hurts. Yeah. And you're angry at yourself and you feel a little ashamed because you feel like it was kind of stupid that you hurt yourself. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what you got. That's what that child needs. That child's brain needs that feedback to build the database.
Yep.
Is it ever too late to do this with a parent-child relationship?
No. The sooner you can start, the better off you are. But you can do it with teenagers. Now, having said that, if you have a 14-year-old boy and you go home tonight and start affect labeling, he's going to look at you and say, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Right? So, and in any relationship, especially with your partners, your spouses, your children, you got to introduce that stuff really subtly and slowly. Yeah. Because what this does is build intimacy very quickly, emotional intimacy. And most people are feeling emotionally unsafe. So they become defensive, or they build up walls, or they become emotionally unavailable. And if you all of a sudden walk through the wall like Superman, because you see right through it and you start labeling, you're going to scare the crap out of people.
Sure.
And they're going to give you a lot of pushback. So you've got to be very, very subtle. I mean, that's why I tell my students, you can do this to your dog, your cat. You can do this to 3, 4 and 5-year-olds. They'll love it. But don't do it to your wife, your husband, or your partner. Don't do it on your teenagers yet. Wait till you get some mastery.
Yeah.
And then practice on people you don't know. And then when you get it figured out and you feel comfortable with it, then just very slowly, it's like a throw. Oh man, you're really frustrated right now. Mm-hmm. Boom, leave it alone. It's just a throwaway observation. Or with your partner, you say, you're really tired. Yeah. You're really frustrated. And you're not feeling respected right now. You feel disrespected. Not another word. And over a period of weeks, that's all it takes is weeks. Over a period of weeks, you're going to create emotional safety.
Sure.
And what happens invariably is once people feel safe, they'll start to talk. Like that 14-year-old, he will go crazy on you verbally. He'll tell you everything you ever wanted to know about what's going on in his life because he's so excited to be able to be in a safe emotional place. And it happens all the time. They can't help themselves because that's the way our brains are hardwired.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's an amazing transformation. And one of the things I'm really motivated to do is teach as many people as I can these skills so they can experience the same transformations that other people have. And we can change all of this anger in our society if we just start listening to each other appropriately.
And I'm sure the key is to be consistent, because if it doesn't work initially, you know, you can't use this. This is not a technique. This is not.
Here's the thing. That's right. And the beauty of it is you can't manipulate with it, because if you're not authentic, it won't work. Right. So and of course, that was one of our big fears going into the prisons was, oh my God, are we going to take these gangbangers and teach them a way of manipulating people? It didn't happen. It just didn't happen. It changed them, radically changed them positively in just incredible ways. So I no longer have the fear that this can be used for ill. But consistency, until it becomes habitual, practicing consistently is important. And then what happens is, like all things, when you have a new skill or a new habit or a new way of being that's better than what you were doing before, the old habit you just don't use anymore because it's not effective. Right. And people will start to affect label naturally. It'll just be part of who they are. And because it feels so good to do it to other people, you get such a strong sense of satisfaction when you're able to calm people down or talk to them and really listen to them, and the gratitude that people come back at you. I've never been so thoroughly listened to in my life. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And you get that a lot, and it just becomes self-reinforcing. And so it becomes easy to practice once you start doing it. In the beginning, it's a little weird because we're not taught to listen to emotions, and we're not taught to tell people what they're feeling. And that's just weird. Mm-hmm. And it's super counterintuitive. And so we have to break through all of these social norms that we've been brought up with that don't apply. They apply to conversation, but they don't apply to listening. And that's the trick. That's the hardest part.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is fascinating stuff for sure. I know you got another meeting to go to.
I'm okay. It's up to you guys. I'm good. I'm good until a little bit before 3:00. So.
Okay. Okay. I couldn't remember what time it was. So yeah, Jonathan, do you have other questions?
The teenager thing is the area that I really need to spend more time in.
Have teenagers at home and, you know, or young adults, and try this out.
I will tell you, I will give you an example that happened this week. So my teenager, they got a 14 and 16-year-old.
There you go.
My wife's grandmother passed away this week. And so it's their great grandmother. And so my son was very sad about it. I mean, obviously it was a disappointing event. So, you know, he stayed home from school the next day. And I tried to use a lot of this, you know, because I was like, when I was reading this earlier and then you're talking, we had a conversation that night about it. And it was just kind of validating his emotions, because it's one of those, I think teenagers start to realize that, you know, they think they're invulnerable until they see something like this happen, someone pass away, especially in your family that's close to you. And then they kind of shakes them up a little bit. So he was just really down. So I did give him a day off. I let him stay home from school the next day. Obviously the following day, he wants to stay home a second day. And then, so I totally throw out the, you know, then I start to kind of, you know, change, and I'm like, wait a minute now, you know, I get one day, but, so I threw all of that time and the emotional bank account that I had built right there. When this first happened, the next day I was a little more, wait a minute. Okay. You've stayed home. You've had your time to grieve and mourn. Time to get back to work, you know. Immediately, you know, kind of a wall goes up and we argue. So it's, again, that's right. I just completely invalidated everything that he was going through just that's because right. I wanted him to kind of get back to work.
And there is a way to get him, to motivate him to get back to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. By validating him.
Sure.
And then problem solving with him. So, I mean, you could have a conversation like this. So you're really sad about the passing of your great-grandmother. This is a lot of grief. The first time you've experienced death, which is can be a little traumatizing and scary for you. Mm-hmm. He said, and he says, yeah. And he says, so how are you going to deal with your life when you experience this kind of trauma? Right. What are you going to do? Are you going to just curl up or do something different? What do you think? Now he's talking. You affect label him and say, all right, so school day, right? Is this the time to curl up, or is this a time to see how you can manage the world
sure.
and the sadness at the same time? And then I'd also tell him, I'd say the true sign of emotional maturity is when you can hold two conflicting emotions inside yourself at the same time. You can be sad and hold grief for your great grandmother. And at the same time, you can be excited about going back to school and seeing your friends and learning. And if you can hold those two feelings at the same time, that's true maturity. You want to try that? See how it works?
Yeah.
You see the difference?
Yeah. Yep.
Just a very slight shift in terms of how you orient to him. And he'll, of course, say, oh, I'm going to tough this out.
Yeah.
And you're not invalidating him. You're not saying, come on, toughen up, sissy. You're not doing that. Because all that will do is shut him down.
Absolutely.
And you don't want that.
Yep.
You want him to be a mature, emotionally mature, responsible young adult. And that's not going to happen naturally. It's your job to teach him how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yet most parents don't have a clue.
Yeah.
Which is why there's so many wounded people out here.
Sure.
And why
sure.
there's so much conflict.
And that's why I say, you know, it's so important to maintain that consistency and
that's right.
just not use it and then throw it out and like, okay.
But on the other hand, I got to give you chops here, because you immediately recognized that you connected with him emotionally on Tuesday, and on Wednesday you didn't, and you saw the result, and now you're being reflective. You're reflecting on that.
Yeah,
that's a huge shift. Most people won't make that connection.
Right.
And by making that connection now, it will motivate you, I think, to be more, try to connect more and invalidate less and just see what happens. Use your 14-year-old as a lab rat.
Absolutely.
I mean, use your kids as your lab rats. Mm-hmm. See
they
what
really
happens.
Are.
Watch. Be exactly. Be observant.
Sometimes we're their lab rats. That's what's great.
Right. That's exactly right. I said, don't take it from me or from the science. Experiment yourself and see what happens.
Yeah.
And you will see. You'll see the change, the shift.
Yeah, well, I told my kids are older, so mine are 19 and 25, and I wish I'd known some of this stuff earlier.
Well,
so that's why I was asking about, is it ever too late?
No.
Obviously it's not, because there's still people. Right. But yeah, I told them later in life when I started learning just more about, you know, human persuasion, psychology and stuff, so I was like, look, guys, I'm sorry. I probably screwed you up in some way, but at least I'm aware of it.
Right.
And
There you go.
I'm giving you a heads up that there's probably some things that I did that I could have done better, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I'm, either way, we're going to screw up the kids, right? So,
well, here's
this helps what us I, do it less.
I get that comment a lot from people who said, oh my God, I must have really screwed up my kids. And I didn't know. And I say, don't beat yourself up. Mm-hmm. This is brand new knowledge.
Yeah.
Lieberman's study came out 13 years ago, 2007. And it's one study in a environment that where people are not reading brain scanning studies. Only crazy people like me do that, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And the neuroscientists have no clue what the application of their work is. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes people like me to read their work and think about, all right, how do we apply this in real life? So we just didn't know. And even now, people don't know. I mean, a lot more people don't know now than before because of doing shows like this, my book, and my speaking and teaching. And I'm really trying to recruit people to spread the word on this stuff. But you can't beat yourself up. You only know what you know. And now that you know, now you can go ahead and start making the shifts and making the changes.
Yeah, that's a great reminder. I mean, we're literally, it's not very often that we're the first generation to understand this big of a leap of knowledge and understanding,
right.
And
that's right,
all that. So I mean, that's pretty cool when you put it that way.
Don't beat yourself up. Be thankful that we have this knowledge, and then you can take your 19-year-old and 25-year-old. They're going to be having kids, hopefully in the not too distant future. Mm-hmm. Teaching this is how you should be treating your kids. I didn't teach you this because I didn't know.
Sure,
but now I do know, and so let's just play around with this and see what it feels like for you.
Mm. Very cool. Well, how can people, you said you wanted to spread this message. So how can people learn more about what you do, learn to do it themselves? Obviously there's the book, De-Escalate. What are the resources?
So DougKnoll.com, Doug Knoll right there, right? Yeah. DougKnoll.com is kind of the primary website. I have there's the book. I've got online courses. I've got weekly Zoom meetings, coaching sessions where I coach people. I've got, and I'm easily available by email or doug@dougknoll.com. So people can email me with interest and whatever their level of interest is. Maybe it's just getting the book. Maybe it's getting turned on to some of the online courses that they can take at their own. Maybe they want some more deep coaching. Maybe they have, you know, I can do all this stuff by Zoom, of course. So they can put together a group where we spend a day learning how to do this stuff on Zoom. Not as fun as being in person, but we're not going to get COVID either. So I'm okay with that. So really it's just a matter of if people are intrigued by what we've been talking about, it's just to reach out to me. I'm a one man shop. I don't have a huge staff. I live on 10 acres in the middle of the Sierra Nevada. So, very cool. This is just what my life is now. It's fun.
Well, Doug, we've really enjoyed the conversation. We got another show coming up, but it's been a pleasure having you on today. And we look forward to getting this out, and we'll be posting a link. And I'll be sending you a link next week when we have it posted.
Oh, great. Where do you post this? Just on YouTube?
Well, we have, it's on YouTube, it's on Twitter, Facebook. Cool. But then I'll send you, we have kind of a show page on our website too.
Oh, great.
I'll send you a link.
Yeah, just send me the link and then I can send it out to my list.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So I'll let people to learn about what you guys are doing, because what you're doing is pretty awesome. So. Yeah,
we have fun. It's fun to have guests like yourself.
If you get to drink beer on the show, that's pretty cool.
And it's a tax write-off too.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Well, Doug, it's been a pleasure. Have a great weekend. And we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay. Take care, guys.
Thanks.
See ya.
Very good. Doug Knoll, and yeah, that was a great, again, his book for all of our listeners is De-Escalate, How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less. And again, Doug mentioned his website. You can also find the book on Amazon. Worth checking out. So very interesting conversation.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check out some of his master classes and courses, because I think this could be really powerful for, you know, if you deal with people, which we all do, not as much as we used to under current circumstances, but, I mean, this would have been great for me to know, like yesterday I was doing a live training, mm-hmm. and some guy bust in like 10 minutes late and on Zoom and just like starts yelling at me that he couldn't find the link. It wasn't posted in the right spot. And there was a room full of people who obviously found the link. So I don't know what happened, but you know, I mean, the guy was upset and I was having a hard time de-escalating him and like would have been good to know. And it totally threw me for
oh, sure. Cause you're into your rhythm with this group.
Yeah.
You've got a group of people and this guy barges in.
And, yeah. So it was like, whoa. And to be able to like do that would have been very useful. So sure. Now I know. So yeah, I'm excited to get the book, and I'll probably get the Audible as well. Cause I'd like to hear him do the examples. If he's the one that reads it, if not, I'll probably just get the book.
Absolutely.
I don't know if he's the reader or not, but yeah, definitely going to follow up with him on some training and things like that. So,
yep.
All right. Well, we got a good show coming up next. Yep. We're going to pull out some classics. You've got a classic. I've got a classic.
Yes.
It'll be classic hour on the next episode.
Yep. Cause the oldies are still the goodies. And there's a lot of stuff you can pull from those old dated books off the bookshelf.
Yeah.
But guys, you can find us. Thanks for listening. You can find us over at Persuasion by the Pint. You can find us on your Apple podcast or any of your favorite podcast platforms. And also want to mention too, you can find us, if you want to join our Facebook group, you can find us over at facebook.com/groups/ Persuasion by the Pint. Verify that. That is right. Yes. groups/persuasion by the Pint. So you can check us out there. We'd love to have you join the group and be a part of the membership. That's where we post all of our streams automatically. They go live every Friday at 4 o'clock. So hopefully you can check us out there. But we'll see you on the next episode, Sean. I'll send you the link. I think I've already got it up. And we'll go from
there. One question before we go.
Oh, yeah.
Did the beer get better?
No. I did drink it, though.
You got to drink it. That's part of the show. So, well, too bad it didn't get better. But all right, well, we'll try another beer on the next show and we'll talk some classics.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
See ya.